Here is an astonishing thing. We do not know where he came from, and yet he opened my eyes. Please be seated. How's that for a good long gospel to get you warmed up for Holy Week? Get stretching out, right? Yeah. Got to show how tough you are. All right, I would like to begin this morning by testing your cultural competence. It's going to be a little Q&A, so feel free to get involved. In the movie Monty Python and the Holy Grail, what animal was used to prove that a woman was a witch? I knew we'd get that from the choir. I knew it. I didn't just hear duck. I heard like quack, 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 quack. The answer is a duck. The learned Bevedier, this is satire, this is silliness. The learned Bevedier uses logic to unmask a witch. He asks, what do we do with witches? We burn them with the right accent, thank you. What else burns? Wood. What does a wood do in water? What else floats? A duck. And so, I didn't tell them this is going to happen, by the way. And so, using a scale that clearly doesn't work, he determines the weight of the woman to be equal to a duck, and from that proves that she is a witch. False logic at work. All right, second cultural question. When Jake and Elwood Blues in the movie The Blues Brothers show up at Bob's Country Bunker and ask, what kind of music do you play here? What was the hostess's answer? Yes, Toby got it. Yes, I heard it out there. We play both kinds, country and western. Excellent. You all pass A+ cultural competency. We play both kinds. This is not just bad logic. It's a false binary. The idea that there are really just two choices, ignoring a whole world of possibility that exists beyond them. As Jesus walked along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? That question is absurd. We know perfectly well that disease and being born without a capacity that most people have, these have nothing to do with sin or with worthiness. Yet the disciples asked this question as if they were listing risk factors on the back of a medication. But let's not forget that we modern folk, we can do this too. We think this way sometimes. Have you ever gone through something really painful and asked, why me? Or what have I done to deserve this? That still lives in our DNA. Far too often, we've all thought some version of that. It is the false premise of worthiness. And it's like a virus that attacks our whole system. When we constantly worry about whether we are worthy of love or good things, we start to live our whole lives out of ego or insecurity rather than out of an embodied awareness of grace. So, who sinned, this man or his parents? It must be either this or that. How clever are we to have narrowed the world down to two choices, two categories that we think we understand pretty well? And we do this all the time. We go there because whenever we're feeling a little bit unworthy or a little insecure in our own skin, nothing quite covers our tracks like a good binary choice, especially when we can be pretty confident about which side we are on, sinner or not sinner, good or bad, American or foreigner, progressive or evangelical, neighbor or stranger, enemy or friend. War is the ultimate false binary. Oh, I think the farther you get towards the trenches and the longer those things drag on, you know what? Those simple explanations become muddied and frayed. But at the outset, nations cross that line between peace and war because an adversary has either become an existential threat or because something that belongs to them really ought to be in our hands. Life or death, yours or mine. War is the ultimate binary. And in almost every case, it has proven to be a profoundly false one. Its lies betrayed by unforeseen casualties and collateral damage that we didn't expect and escalations that nobody saw coming except for the fact that we all saw it coming. The war in Iran is one of the strangest things I've ever seen. Because most Americans aren't buying it. This war was necessary. Was it? This war will be quick. Will it? This war will be surgical. This war will be limited in collateral damage. The families of 175 people, most of whom are schoolgirls, whose school was bombed twice, beg to differ. That is not to say that the Iranian government is not dangerous, violent, and stuck in the pathologies of its own flawed binaries. But we cannot answer one sick paradigm with another and presume to call it right or sustainable or something that is going to lead to the lasting peace that we desire. But getting back to the gospel, I don't think I ever left the gospel, but getting back to it, if you start with a false paradigm, everything downstream just gets weirder and weirder. And that's why the crazy length of this gospel passage actually helps us, because this is an incoherent world that unfolds throughout the whole story, largely because it starts from this false paradigm. Here in the gospel, the man, he is born without sight, and the assumption is that either he sinned or his parents sinned. So besides living without sight, he also lives with shame. And I would ask, thinking about him, thinking about his parents who have this bizarre perspective on their own son, right? They look at him, unable to see, and they think, oh, what did I do wrong? Or what did he do wrong? Can you see how that distorts their relationship with their son? And how that distorts the relationship of the entire community? That's what shame does. Has shame ever helped anybody to get better at anything? Have you ever tried to fix something by making somebody else feel ashamed about it? I assure you, it doesn't work. If anything, it's only going to make the situation worse. The vibe is so weird. That is a theological term, by the way. That when Jesus heals him, the answer from his family is not joy or faith, but what any one of us would have done if our child was suddenly, or our young child or adult child was relieved of the inability to see or hear or be well. We would be overjoyed. We would be thrilled that this has happened. That is not what happens. Instead, they descend into blame and self-preservation. That should be a sign that this is kind of a weird vibe. The parents won't even admit to what they can plainly see. So fearful are they of being ostracized by their community. Sometimes it takes courage to speak the truth, even the most plain to see thing in front of you. But his parents are sadly so deeply embedded in a broken system that they can't see it or they can't name it. They are stuck. When we narrow our world to simple, binary, either-or scenarios, which 99% of the time are vastly incomplete, even life and death don't fit into that because, spoiler alert, Easter is coming. When we try to cram this vast, beautiful, complicated world into a simple yes or no answer, we create a reality that is unkind and incoherent at best. That's what we get in the gospel, or violent and hostile at worst, which sadly is what we see playing out in Iran, in Ukraine, in so many other broken places. Jesus doesn't just restore sight to the blind. Jesus calls us to let go of our grip on this incoherent world so that our hearts can affix to something that is real, something that is eternal. And we know that we're falling for it, and we all do, that we are falling for those binary sucker traps. We know that deep down we are struggling with our own worthiness. When other people have hardened for us into those clear and easy categories that we have set for them. When people are gracious enough to be the projections we have set for them, how kind of them, right? They fit right into our little categories. We cannot restore the world from those categories, for they contain a version of reality that simply does not exist. Howard Thurman tells the story of a friend who himself was blind from birth, who said this. He said, "Out of sympathy or something, folk make it hard for me to keep from feeling sorry for myself. And if I do that, I am sunk. If I feel sorry for myself," he said, "if I become an object of someone else's pity, then not only do I lack sight, but I have lost a piece of my humanity." In the gospel, sight is a paradox. Jesus teaches us to see the world with a deeper perception than eyesight or certainty allow. Excuse me. In the gospel, blindness is not a birth defect, but rather the burden of certainty that has calcified around our hearts and made us unable to see the world beyond those simple, easy, yes, no answers. What we perceive with certainty is precisely what distracts us from the greater life. "I have learned one thing," Howard Thurman's friend said to him. "My contact with people is direct and immediate. Without sight, when you cannot see clothes or facial expressions, you listen more deeply, not just with your ears, but with your heart." Which is to say that he does not get so easily stuck in the simple answers at the surface. in those frictionless either-ors that so easily camouflage our deepest fears. Having been healed, the man in the gospel answered to all of this pathological weirdness that surrounded someone who did something miraculous and amazing and then asked others simply to tell the truth about it. He said, "Here is an astonishing thing. The man who healed me is not one of us. He doesn't play by our rules. He isn't from a familiar place. And he doesn't seem to get terribly affected by our existential anxiety about those rules. And yet, he opened my eyes." Amen.